do a quick review of the most important point of what we saw last time. We started the topic of Musar Eloki, or Musar HaKodesh, the third volume of Orot HaKodesh, and we discussed what's the difference between Musar Chiloni and Musar Eloki. It just so happens that the previous shura that I always teach in Petach Tikva, in the Yeshivat Hezder, right before here, and on my way out, as I was running to the car to try and get here on time, a guy asked me exactly this question. And I told him, Bezat Hashem, we'll learn it next week, because I was trying to answer, you know, but it's an unbelievable question, a very important question. Why do you need religion to be moral? And what we saw last week
at the wrong end.
Sorry?
Well, I think that's the question with Avraham Avinu. How did Avraham Avinu know midos? As the Rashi says, right, that he looks at different animals. Well, but why didn't he could have looked at the wrong animals?
Mm-hmm. Fine. There are a couple different points, but Zvat Hashem, hopefully we'll touch on 5 points. The first point, which we saw last week, is the most basic and obvious point, that Musar Chiloni, first of all, we also have to mention that Rav Kook is not against secular Musar. As a matter of fact, he says that Musar Chiloni stems from the same source, right? We discussed that there are 4 ways to lead to Musar. One is through the Torah, second is through tradition, the third is through logic, and the fourth through Yosher, your conscience. And all of them stem from God. And there was the same God who wrote the Torah and who started the Masoret is the same one who created the conscience and who created the logic. And therefore, it's not a coincidence that they all lead to the same point, because they all started from the same point. In other words, that was the first important point, that there's no such thing as Musar Chol, Musar Chiloni. Musar Chiloni, which is based on your conscience or logic, is good because it's godly. That was like an introduction. But the problem is that Musar Chiloni is not, in the words of Rav Kook, Ein ladracha zo tfisa omedet bifnei ha'istarut shel tavot shonot. Musar Chiloni is not strong enough to stand up against the pressures of the Yitzharim, of the Yitzhar Hara, when they awaken in their full force. And we gave, just to mention one example, the fact that if 75% of the men in America, according to the internet, cheat on their wives, and you ask, all of them will agree that it's not moral, it's not ethical, and they all have a conscience, and they're all logic, and they wouldn't like if their wife would do it to them. Nevertheless, there are certain things that if the reason why you're moral is because it feels good to be moral, so sometimes it feels even better
to be immoral,
right? And that's a problem. Okay? Now, where we left off is that nevertheless, there are definitely chilonim whose level of morality is very high. Okay? Then, what we spoke about last week, that a religious person has self-discipline. Just like for all of the money in the world, he would not eat an olive's worth of pig. So too, if he learned halacha, and he learned musar, and he understands that to lie or to cheat is the same thing as eating pig, for all the money in the world, he wouldn't do it. And he has that discipline in him. Okay? And on the other hand, there are definitely Chiloni people who have that as well. And I mentioned at the end of the shiur, did I mention? No, I don't think I mentioned. There was a guy in Artironut named Yoav. And he's from Savion. Good boy. A good family, wealthy family, well-mannered. And one of the things in Tironut, the basic training that the Mefagdim, they try and pressure you. And they give you 7 minutes to eat. And you have to wait online, which takes 5 minutes. And if you're going to do Netilat Yadayim, that takes another minute. And Birkat HaMazon takes another 3 minutes. And you already don't have any time. So a lot of times during this stage of Tirunut, Dati soldiers will just stay and wait in the back of the line or eat their, you know, whatever they have, the chocolate or jelly, what they have in their tikk, and let the chiloniim, you know, bash each other over the head, you know, for the food. They're just as hungry, but they're not going to beat somebody up just for food. Now, Yov was one of the few chilonim, maybe the only one, that was also in that category. He would also stay back, and he was really a nice guy. And one time we were on Shmirah together, and we were discussing this point. By the way, just about every time I'm on Shmirah with a chiloni in my life, this point comes up. Because you have 4 hours, you're going to talk about religion. He's going to say, you know, I can be just as good a person without religion, I can be just as moral, etc., etc. So, and that's exactly where we were at in this conversation. And I remembered that it was just around Rosh Hashanah time. How do I remember? Because in the previous Shmirah, on Shmirah you listen to a lot of radio, and on the previous Shmirah, I had heard that every year the Misrad HaPnim, the Minister of Interior, gives awards to different cities for the city with the least crime, the city with the least, lichluch, garbage, the city with the best tourism, the city with the best nihul, etc., etc. Anyway, I asked Yoav, what city do you think won this year, and every year wins the city with the reward, with the award, the pras for the least crime? So he says, I don't know. So I answered him, Bnei Brak. And without thinking, he said, Ma ata rotze, kulam datiyim. He says, what do you want? They're all religious there. And that's Rav Kook's next point. Okay, let's see it inside. Kal vachomer. You see, we're on the the fifth line of the third paragraph of the first source. Okay? Maybe we'll start at the beginning of the paragraph just to get into it. Hamusar shochol enenu amok. Secular morality is not deep. Ve'eno nichnas bepnimiyut haneshama. It doesn't really get deep. It's more superficial. Secular morality does get a person to do good things, like we spoke about last time. Logic, your conscience. But, and this was point number one, secular morality isn't strong enough to stand up against the strong yitzarim, the strong drives. How do you say yitzarim? Is there a better translation?
Desires,
right? Kishen mitorod bechuzka, right? That was last week's point. And here's the second point. Kal v'chomer she'en biyad musar rafui kazeh ladrich et haklalot et hatzibur ha'enoshi ba'omko ve'ekev godlo lachdor el omek ha'neshama. It may be secular morality may be good for a tzaddik here, a tzaddik there, somebody who has good upbringing, good genes, good education, whatever. In other words, there are definitely secular people who are very, very nice.
It's a pasuk from Yechezkel.
Sorry?
It's a pasuk from Yechezkel.
Which
part?
Right. What Rav Kook is saying, though, is that's not the goal of the Torah. To produce just a couple of individual tzaddikim. Individual tzaddikim there are in every nation, whether in Africa or Asia or North America or in Israel. There are some people who are just born that way, some people have good parents, etc. But that's not the goal of the Torah. The goal of the Torah is to bring morality and ideals to all of mankind. Now, if you can have a city like Bnei Brak with 120,000 people, where just about no murder, just about no drugs, just about no theft, you know, there are problems in Bnei Brak. I'm not saying that it's Gan Eden. But there's Kavim Adumim, there's red lines that any religious person is never going to cross. And that is a sig. Statistically, anybody who learns statistics knows that 500 is considered statistically significant. Whereas if you do a survey of 500 people, that means you're going to catch more intelligent, less intelligent. Blue collar, white collar, gray collar, more religious, less religious, Ashkenazi, Sephardi. That's considered a large cut of society. Now, if you would find 500 people where there's no crime, Kalvachomer 5,000 people, Kalvachomer 50,000 people where there's no crime, Kalvachomer 120,000, that means that it is possible to run a society, not just where there are individual tzaddikim, but where an entire society just doesn't kill, just doesn't steal. And the problem when people talk, you know, about the, in the 50s, there was the saying, Marokai Sakin, you know, that the Moroccans, you know, they all stab each other and they're violent and killers. And I have no doubt that there are more murderers in jail today in Israel than there were in all of Morocco throughout history. How many murderers were there? If everyone's religious, everyone's Shomer Shabbat, if everyone's Shomer Shabbat, and everyone grows up in a family of Tarat HaMishpacha, there's just so bad you're going to come out. And that is, if you can do it in Bnei Brak of 120,000, that means that you can run a whole state that way, which means that you can run a whole world that way. In other words, statistically, this is very significant. And that is point number two. In order to bring ethics and morals and ideals to the masses, you have to bring God into the picture. Where just as it's against the law to cross against a red light, if it's against the law to talk Lashon Hara, or to take a lost object home without announcing it, or things like that, they're just so bad that those people are going to come out. And this is a very, very important point.
I wouldn't like to test that on the different crime then, let's say, tax evasion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That brings us back to point number one. We already addressed that. In other words, if a religious person knows that tax evasion equals pig, right, he's gonna be super careful not to do it. The problem is, like Rabbi Yisrael Salanter complained, and the Ramchal before him complained, and Rabbi Chovot and Valvot complained, and Rabbi Kol complained, and we've been that yeshivot don't teach musar, but in yeshivot where it's taught.
I understand that as, you know, equating if the isur is equated, something that we find repugnant, like eating pig, then it obviously becomes more chamor. But is it not possible also that our taiva, our sort of temptation, which we call it, to talk Lashon Hara or to fiddle our taxes, is greater than our temptation to eat pork? Especially since most of us never grew up and never tasted it and have no clue what it's about, and therefore you don't have a great taiva.
It's a good question. I would say that the example that I gave before let's take the example that we gave last week of lo tinaf, of cheating on your spouse, right? It just really doesn't happen too often within religious community. And by the way, I'm talking about religious Christians also. Right. If a guy's a religious Christian, right, he's not going to cheat on his wife,
right?
Because God is wherever you go, mm-hmm. And you can't. According to Freud and also according to Chazal, there's no temptation stronger than that. Because if you can control the sexual desire, that means you can control anything. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's point number two. Point number three . Let's see source number four. Source four, in the upper left-hand corner. This is a piska from Orot, from the beginning of Orot Yisrael, Perak Aleph, Pasuk Dal, Piska Dalid. Atzmut ha-chefetz shel heyot tov lakol. Blo shum hagbala ba'olam klal. The desire to be good to everything. Not only to everyone, notice everything. To be good to nature, to be good to animals, to be good to goyim, to be good to Jews, to be good to your family, to be good to your nation, etc., etc. That desire to be good to everything, below shum hagbala ba'olam klal, without any limit, to really be totally good, a totally good person, bein bekamut hanitavim, bein be'echuto shel hatov, without any limit as to the number of people you're good to, or the quality of goodness of your good, zeh agarin apnimi shel mahut nishmata shel Knesset Yisrael. This is the essence of Knesset Yisrael. Now Rav Kook goes on to explain, what is this idea to be good to everyone and to everything? Right? If there's one sunflower seed, and you give it to Avi, that means that Binyamin isn't getting it. Right? In other words, somewhere along the line, if you're good to your family, sometimes it's at the expense of your parents. If you're good to your parents, sometimes it's at the expense of your family. If you're good to your wife, sometimes it's at the expense of your kids.
And that's point number three.
Point number three is you need an objective judge to tell you objectively what is good and how to be good to everyone and to everything. And what are the right priorities? Otherwise, just kind of totally mivulbal, right? You could have somebody saying, I think it's moral to kill Jews or to kill blacks in the name of morality. Unless you bring God into the picture, and again, I think we mentioned last week, Plato said that even if there was no God, we would have to invent him. Right, that's a good line for your students. It's really true. Even if there was no God, we would have to invent him, because otherwise there's no morality. Okay, you say thou shalt not kill, I say yes. Right? Or you say you can kill gypsies, he says you can kill blacks, and there's who's to decide? You need a referee. You can't play football or soccer or basketball or anything unless you have a set of rules which apply to everyone. And therefore, you need a one objective God who can tell us how to be good to your family, sometimes at the expense of your nation, sometimes to be good to your nation at the expense of your family, when to be good to your parents. That's what the Shulchan Aruch is for. Now, where does this come from? Tov Hashem lakol, v'rachamav al kol ma'asav. As we're out to be good to everyone and to everything. Bezat Hashem, one of the articles that we're going to be doing is Chazon HaTzimchonut, where Rav Kook writes about vegetarianism. Right? So that's a classic example. When to be good to animals at the expense of people, when to be good to people at the expense of animals. For example, hunting is asur, eating is allowed, wearing leather, not wearing leather, what if there are leather substitutes? These are all questions, and we'll talk about them in Chazon HaTzimchonut. Okay, but you have to know when to give to one at the expense of the other. How do you know? There's only one answer: to have an objective judge. Right? We discussed once in paganism, that's the problem with one of the problems of polytheism and paganism. If you have a lot of gods, you can justify anything. Right? If you have a lot of different judges, there's no one objective truth. There's no one objective moral code. If there is one God, and again, even if there wasn't one God, we would need a God to set down what is the moral code. What is that one objective truth? Okay? Hammurabi said that it is moral to kill slaves. You're allowed to kill your wife. You're allowed to kill your daughter. He said that in the name of morality. You know, or they say Aristotle, they said that he said it was moral to kill demented people or to kill people if they are old after a certain age. So it was to say, you know, abortion, yes, no, maybe. You know, how do you know? Whereas it's not enough to say be moral. If you're chiloni, everyone decides their own morality. And that's why you have to bring God into picture, and that's point number three, to have an objective morality. And not only objective morality, to know what's good and what's bad, but also to know how to divide it up in between the different people and different topics. Okay. Connected with this...
Sorry, can I just ask a question?
Yeah.
Completely understand the argument. It obviously makes sense that without an objective judge, morality is completely subjective. Everyone makes up their own. Okay. However, you take Plato's quote: "If it wasn't a god, we'd have to create him, have to invent him."
Yeah.
So that's the claim that, say, of many people nowadays is that that's exactly what happened. That it was invented. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And if you follow that to its logical conclusions, if you believe that, then you say, okay, this is invented, so what I'm saying is there really is no objective morality, and I don't want to believe in something just because it was invented. I'm going to trust myself to set my own morality. You know, to go back to where you started
in
from.
In other words, what you're saying is Plato is wrong. Okay, that's what I'm saying. I also don't agree with Plato. I just brought him to prove white ass. In other words, it can't be a bluff. You can't say, if there is a God.
Right.
Because,
it's not good enough for me.
Your question is a question on Plato. I'm not a Plato.
Right. So what I'm saying is, when we start with the question, we started with the question of, why
our point, that's not our point.
No, we started with the question, why do we need God to be moral? So, I think we've answered that. If there's no objective judge, then there is no morality. And what we're saying is, so, you can be what you call moral, but that's your own standard.
Your question is based on the fact that maybe there is no God.
Is it for someone who doesn't believe in God?
Yeah.
So
he has a serious problem with morality. Right. That's the point. Uh-huh. He has a problem because even if he wants to take the Plato approach, eventually he's going to say, "Well, it's a bluff." And it's like so they say. I heard once that there are marriage counselors that suggest to couples to something along the lines of Tarat HaMishpacha. To have certain times where they separate themselves, in other words,
Right, to refresh.
And supposedly it doesn't work, simply because as soon as you... If you agree and she agrees, okay, so let's, let's put that idea in the freezer for tonight, right? And it turns out everything's a bluff. In other words, you need a real God. And we're lucky that there is one. Because that's the point. Okay, there is one, so we're lucky that there is one.
Right.
Okay. Not just lucky, but
right.
That's true.
Well,
it's not a bluff.
You can't use Plato's logic to prove God's existence.
That's not.
Of course not.
No, that's not our topic.
But if someone just...
Dafka, we're going to talk in a couple minutes about Pascal has an interesting approach who... you'll see how it's connected with what you just said.
But if someone wants to do it, something in their house that doesn't affect society, meaning that would be the perfect approach. The perfect approach would be everyone votes on everything that we do together. It's a democratic society. Everyone decides democratically what exactly the morality should be.
So if the majority of whites say that not to let blacks into the neighborhood, that becomes moral?
And that works out well until the majority of people change their minds.
We say that is wrong. To judge a person by the color of his skin is wrong, period. It's a totally different morality. You're right, there's a problem with democratic morality. Hitler came to power because of democracy.
There are societies that have no rules on ownership, that everything belongs to everybody and everyone takes from everyone, but they all agree with it maybe, but it's still immoral.
Yeah. Right. Okay, point number four, which is connected to this. Is that the halachic demands demand a level of morality, of super morality, that secular man would never dream of. I once gave a class to a Ulpan Giyur, to a group of converts who were in the process of conversion. And I gave him a couple of examples of Hilchot Lashon Hara. Now, anybody who's religious, you grow up with Hilchot Lashon Hara, so you know that you can't say this, you can't say that. And for example, I gave them the example of Avak Lashon Hara, which you all know, that you're not allowed to say something positive about somebody if there's somebody there who's going to say something negative. And there was a woman there who was a former nun, and it just blew her away. She couldn't imagine such a high standard of morality. You learn the laws of Hashavat Aveda. What is the halakhic definitions? And if you see a ball, you're not allowed, it's also Yisur Lav, a positive, and also a negative commandment, Lo Titalein, you're not allowed to pass it by. You have to pick it up. You have to go and you make signs. You have to hang it up. And here on the Yishuvim, you have to, the Rav really should publicize the details of the halachot. Because a lot of times you take something home, and davka, the odds of finding the person who's the baby who lost his bottle, if there's no simanim, right, nobody knows. And it's also not that expensive. So sometimes halachically it is better to leave it in its place. Right? So we don't have time, that's not our time to go into all the details of the halachot. But you learn the Shulchan Aruch of Hilchot, all the halachot bin adam lechavero, right? We are demanded to be super moral, not just a little more. You know what, speak to a chiloni once about the laws of slandering, right? There is a law, a secular law, against Lashon Hara. In Israel it's called Lashon Hara. Mm-hmm. I was at a kenes on Yom Sheni, on Monday, about the Tikshoret. And one of the problems in the Tikshoret is that the law allows them to, you can slander someone, except in A, B, and C cases. Right? If you have proof, for example, you're allowed. If it's true, it's allowed. According to the laws of slander, according to Halacha, even if something is true, you're not allowed to say it.
That makes a lot of sense.
That's exactly Lashon Hara, as opposed to Motzi Shemra. In other words, we're not going to have a whole shiur about, parking without putting money in the meter. That is a halachic isur, right? To use the operator to pass a message without paying or things. These are halachic shelotu tshuvot, questions that are brought down la halacha that a chiloni would never dream of obligating. Much like he wouldn't even dream of them. Much more to obligate it. Much more to obligate the entire nation to a super high level of morality. And that's point number four. Secular morality won't even come close to the super morality that the halacha can and does demand. The fifth and the final point, please look at source 3. Also from Musar HaKodesh, in the second paragraph. Hamusar shel kfira eino klum. Isn't an interesting sentence? Mm. There can't be such a thing as morality. Mipnei she'akfira be'atzma hi hefech hatzedek v'amusar hayisodi. Because as soon as you deny God or the Creator, that in itself is immoral. Can somebody try to take an educated guess? What does Rav Kook mean here? Why is not believing in God immoral? Yeah?
The opposite of Hakarat HaTov.
Oh, yafeh. In other words, let's take it from the top. We once spoke about that, what is Chesed Shel Emet, the highest level of Chesed? To be like God, to be altruistic. And that's the example of being on the Chevra Kadisha. When you bury a dead person, he's not going to say thank you. He's not going to return the favor. And that's why that's considered altruism. Just like God gives without getting anything in return. That's the highest level of chesed. One step a little lower than that is to do chesed to someone in order to get something in return. Okay? I give you something for your birthday so that you give me something on my birthday. Okay? This is obviously a much lower level, but because of it, it's nice. Nice to run society that way. And as you invite me, I invite you, and okay. That's a little lower level. A little lower than that is after you already gave me something for my birthday to return it. In other words, I already owe you something. I'm just repaying it, you know. So that's a little lower level. In other words, because I don't really mean it, but nevertheless, you know, it's a, you know, decency. Somebody gives you something, at least to return the favor. Okay, that's the third level. What would be one step lower than that? Hakarat HaTov. In other words, if somebody gives you something, at least say thank you. Minimum. As you don't want to give it back, you don't want to return a favor, you don't want to give him a present on his birthday, but minimum, say thank you. Right? I gave a shiur on the Yom HaTzma'ut about this, the lack of Hakarat HaTov, the idea, if God gave us the state of Israel, and any religious Jew believes that it's God who runs the world, and it was God who gave us the War of Independence, and he gave us the state, and 3 years after the Holocaust, it said, how can you not say thank you to God? That's just the minimum. My little daughter, on Shabbat, she likes challah with hummus. And as soon as I finished cutting the challah and giving it out, she asks, Abba, challah in hummus. If she doesn't say bevakasha, right? I'll teach her, you know, to say please. You know what, you didn't say please. Okay. After she gets it, all parents know this. What do you say if she ever gets to say thank you? What's the magic word? Or, you know, they lay that out. Now for challah and hummus, you're supposed, common decency. Somebody gave you something, at least say thank you, right? That's the minimum of decency. You see where we went. In other words, the Torah wants us, but what we said now is the Sefer HaChinuch on Kibud Avim. He says, why is the Tamei Mitzvot on Kibud Avim, the Shorash Mitzvah, is that after your parents gave you so much throughout your life, minimum is Hakarat HaTov, right? To at least appreciate that which they give you. At least, even if you to repay it back day and night, you're not even going to reach half of what they gave you. And that's the minimum. Again, we want to raise everyone to be altruistic. The minimum is Hakarat HaTov. So again, if there is a creator, and he created the world, and he gave us life, and he gave us everything that we have, then obviously it is the minimum of decency or morality to say thank you, and to recognize it. Now, if somebody says, well, I'm not sure there's a God, that's an important line. Because you don't know that there is, you don't know that there isn't. Right? And that's the famous Pascal line that I mentioned before. Blaise Pascal, I think the French pronounce it, Blaise. B-L-A-I-S-E.
Blaise.
You probably S at the end of the word, you probably don't have to pronounce it. In America, Blaise Pascal. She says that the existence of God is a gamble. This is what's called Pascal's gambit. He says, we don't know if there is, we don't know if there isn't. You can't know that there isn't, just like you can't know that there isn't phalloustics, right? What is a phalloustic? I don't know. You don't know if there is, you don't know if there isn't. I haven't been throughout the whole universe. I was never in South America. I don't know what there is there. I don't know what there isn't there. How do you know? Nobody could ever say that he knows that there's no God. Maximum, the maximum of kfirah, if a person's honest, is that he could say, I don't know that there's a God. Pascal says, if so, emunah, according to Pascal, I don't believe this approach again, but just to understand his approach, he says, I can't prove that there is a God, I can't prove that there isn't a God. If so, it's a gamble. Now, say that I gamble that there is a God, and it turns out I get to heaven, and there's no God. So, I missed out on a little fun. nothing big happened, you know? So I wasted some time.
And you have no consciousness of that either.
Right. There's nothing, right. You know.
You don't know you lost.
You know, you don't know that you lost. That's a good point. I never thought of that. On the other hand, if you gamble the opposite, say that you gamble that there's no God, and then you get up to heaven or hell, and you find out that there is, you're in trouble. Deep trouble.
Hot water.
And Pascal says that even if you're not sure that there's a God, and again, I don't believe, just like I'm not a Plato, I'm not a Pascalian, but that's the minimum. Even if you don't know that there is a creator, maybe there is. And that means that it is immoral, even if it's a safek, even if it's a doubt, 50-50, it is immoral not to say thank you. Right? Especially if somebody gave you so much. Okay? We once had, a bunch of years ago, all of a sudden they called from the bank that we got a whole bunch of money in our bank account. A gift from somebody. In euros. It's not dollars, you know, so trying to figure out who could it be. And we whittled down to two possible relatives. One lives in France, the other lives in Tel Aviv. And we don't have too much of a kesher with them, but you know, every now and then, wealthy people, very nice, very benevolent. And the problem is, you want to call to thank them. You can't not call. But it's a safek. You don't know to call this cousin or this uncle. We decided to play it safe.
Both.
And call both. Thank God, you know, we felt out the first one enough, and it was him, you know. But even if I were in doubt, which it's a 50% chance, the same thing as Pascal, right? If in doubt, it's immoral not to thank God, right? And that's the minimum of decency. And that's what Rav Kook means. That's how I understand what Rav Kook means when he says that the kfira eino klum, musar shel kfira, there cannot be such a thing as a heretical morality. Because heresy by itself, by definition, is immoral. To summarize, we mentioned 5 points. 5 problems that you have with secular morality, where religious or godly morality solves the problem. And again, this is whether you're Christian, whether you're Jewish, or whatever your religion. You need God in the picture to be moral. Point number one, we said, you need religious morality to stand up when the desires awaken in their full force. Point number two is that even if individual secular people can have a really high level of morality without God, that's not enough. Because to bring God to the masses, to bring morality to the masses, you have to bring God into the picture. Point number three is that you need an objective God in order to have one objective moral code, one objective truth. Otherwise, everyone decides and justifies whatever they feel like justifying. Point number four, Musar HaKodesh, religious morality, doesn't just bring you to morality. It demands and obligates a super morality that no chiloni, no secular person would ever dream of. And point number five is that there can't be secular morality without God, because if a person denies the Creator and doesn't say thank you, even if he's in doubt, he's not sure that there is, he's not sure that there isn't, you cannot, the minimum of Musar is to say thank you. Yeah.
So, it all seemed to make pretty good sense to me up until the end.
Yeah.
So what is the secular morality that we've been talking about this whole time? If it's not a morality without God,
secular morality, Rav Kook said, that's what we learned last week, is good compared to paganism.
Right, no,
compared
no.
Compared to living
that was all fine, I'm saying, but now what's this eino klum business at the end?
He says that it can't exist.
But the beginning would say it does exist, and it can't exist.
No, it exists to a certain level. In other words, your conscience does get you to do good things. And logic does get you to do good things. But if you intellectually, honestly, truthfully, if you think it out, it's a tarte de satre. It's an oxymoron to say that I am a secular or non-believing moral person, because not believing in God or not saying thank you is by definition immoral. Nevertheless, like we said before, now obviously it's better to be a secular moralist than to be a secularist.
When you hear Rav Kook says, "V'nim sasha kofrim shem balei musar," if someone really is a balei musar lo bekfiratam, he may karata lokim, meaning they're not doing it because they're kofrim, they're doing it because they really believe in God. Kilu agnuzav omik nafsham. They have like nitzotz lokim and shame.
So they believe in God even though they don't.
Right.
Deep down.
There's not anything that's really
deep down. In other words, that's another part of it.
No, so in other words,
not related. I was
speaking to a secular group, though, obviously, or a wavering group on the fence. I would get into this. Why? Because for you, for me, anybody who learned Maharal, who learned Kuzari, who knows what's Gula Yisraeli, who knows the basic godliness or goodliness of the neshama, so that gets back to what we said last week, that the conscience and logic comes from the same address, from the same place that that God wrote the Torah.
So, really, the maskana then, at the end, is that everything that we were talking about at the beginning was just sort of... in other words, that really, but I meant there is no secular morality.
No, there is, again, but philosophically, there really isn't. In other words, if you think it out, there really isn't. Nevertheless, it's important to stress that Rav Kook does believe that secular people have a certain morality, which comes from their godliness.
They're not bound to have it, that's the point, surely. They're not bound to have that morality. As we said, since they can set it subjectively,
that's a problem.
Their morality in this generation may be something we would admire or say, okay, that's good, as far as it goes. In another generation, their morality may be very, very poor.
That was point number three.
Right.
And what we're saying is that even though sometimes
when it turns out right, we're saying either because... From point one, it's because it comes from the religious, from the source of the same source of the sort of the correct drives and recognition of Torah's oracle, maybe we're saying point five that it's devalued by the fact that they won't recognize where it's coming from. It's coming from there, but they're not recognizing.
And that's a moral problem. A very important topic, by the way. Anybody who works with Chilonim or I think we're for your Hever from New Zealand or whatever, they could. This point is an important point. This topic. Tough.